It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hey, welcome back over to Hang On. What's going on over here, buddy? Hang on. What are you doing to me? Is this American loser or I can steal that? I'm not sure right now.
I don't know. I think it's a crossover episode.
Uh-oh.
Holy crap. What?
It's just like when the Bradys went on vacation. All right, man. We're going to have a good time here today. I'm excited. If you're an American Loser listener, you already know about what our show does, but you don't know anything about my guest today's show. It's a crossover. Not even a guest, really. We're just co-producing, buddy.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like a guest. I'm
co-producing and I'm doing all the work. That's the music industry in a nutshell, people.
Well, say this. We are behind the ones and twos, of course. Listeners of my show, American Loser, which puts the spotlight firmly on second place. We are Tales from American History. My dilf of a dad is not here today.
But he left us.
He did. He's camping in Western New Jersey. But,
and he told you you were adopted. Well, I'm sorry.
We were going to figure it out eventually. That's why he's Vietnamese and I'm not.
That's true.
But
that's why he has the most epic mustache.
It hurts. I don't know why he does this. He rehashes jokes from other episodes to hurt me with. I don't know why, but so I'm excited here. We are at a Shared Universe podcast studio. Mike and Ming taking great care of us as always. Kahuna is behind the ones and twos. I got a great guest in today, and we're going to do a tag team of sorts here, brother. I'm excited to have you on the episode. Introduce yourself. Talk about the show for a sec, man.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this. Yeah. I'm Pete Stegmaier. I am the host of I Can Steal That. That is a podcast. It's a true crime podcast without any of the murder. True crime you can feel good about. Each episode is about a different heist, con, scam, swindle. It's basically like true crime where you can like root for the guy and not feel like a huge piece of shit because he murdered a bunch of people.
Make crime great again.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
dude, that's a great line too, though, man. But Pete, great comic. Met you in New York City, man. Also, two veterans hanging out over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that's...
So it was, as I recall, Army, right?
Yes.
Fucking A, man. So we got an Army veteran, a Navy veteran, and then we got Kahuna over here who has a high
school country buffet veteran.
This guy. Why do you put yourself down like
that? That wasn't a put down.
Fair enough.
It gets heated when they bring out like the fresh mashed potatoes.
Like, yeah, man. Like it's dangerous. That's why they shut down both locations closest to me. They were like, we can't have this motherfucker come in again.
What's the one Foxworthy does the commercials for and Larry the Cable Guy down south?
Is it Old Country Buffet?
I don't know if it was Old Country Buffet or if it was whatever it was. I just knew that when I lived in Jacksonville, Florida, I refused to go there because I even
Golden Corral?
There it is, Golden Corral. I told the girl I was with at the time, I was just like, no, I have dignity, ma'am. We will not go to Golden Corral. And then we live near a Chick-fil-A, so that was pretty much it. But, dude, you got a great podcast. Former guest of this show, Lynette Palladino, was just on yours recently, right?
She was. She's great.
What was the topic? Because it was really interesting from what she was telling me.
Yeah, we covered a Spanish, like, a self-made spy. Like, he tried to be a spy in World War II for the Allies, and they turned him down. So he ended up, going to the Nazis. Said, hey, I'd love to be a spy, and then like set up like a fake spy network of like 27 people like across the UK. And he was like drawing pensions for like all of them. And then went back to the Brits. He's like, oh, I have this like fake Nazi spy network. They're like, you're the guy. And then he became like a double agent, but he like wasn't like a member of the military or anything like that. He just like Juan Pujol Garcia. It's an insane story. Like, and he did like so well that like Hitler gave him an Iron Cross.
Nah, we're not talking about whatever topic y'all picked. We're talking about that. But that sounds insane.
It's been done, Christian.
Like, it's like if you scam Hitler, like you're good people. I feel like
scamming Hitler. We had a friend of mine, a great, wonderful human being, one of the truly great people of the New Jersey comedy scene. Donna Vicels is her name. And she once sent it to me that she actually had an Iron Cross. And she goes, can you tell me what this means? And I was kind of breaking it down for just a little bit. I knew off the top of my head. And she goes, so I should not wear it clubbing anymore. Right? And I was like, depending on what club, Donna, you let me know. But I'm excited here, dude. We got a killer topic today we're going to talk about. So on my show, for regular listeners and hopefully some new listeners, I'm stealing from you, buddy.
Oh, absolutely.
What we do is we talk about the losers in American history. They can be any sort of reason. It can be people who either got lost in the annals of history. Or
people who were just straight up
douchebags, people with controversial legacies. I think today's topic,
I think it counts.
They got some controversial legacies. And then Pete does a great show about, you know, kind of famous heists in history. Now, these are not the good guys you want to root for, as you mentioned in your intro for the show. These are kind of bad dudes today.
Yeah, they're pretty objectively terrible.
Well, without God damn it. I hate that. Don't you ever touch your iPad right when somebody sends you a stupid spam message on your Facebook?
And then it takes you right to that window and you're like, oh, why? Let me get out of here.
Yeah, now I got to reopen Google Docs. Thank you, Jeff Zenisek. I get it. You have a new idea for your show. excited here. So here we are, two broad-shouldered veterans that both landed amid the sea of mental illness that is stand-up comedy. And we're going to talk trash about other people today. So
I mean, isn't that what stand-up comedy is all about?
It's true, man.
Yeah, nature is coming back. I feel like things are getting normal.
Hopefully, man. Hopefully. Slowly but surely, too. And then before you know it, we'll be eating burritos upstairs and going downstairs to perform art.
We'll define normal.
It's the truth, man. Pete, you want to introduce the topic for this week?
Yeah, sure. So we are going to be talking about one of the most famous outlaws probably ever, definitely in American history. One of the most prolific bank robbers of all time. Train robbing pioneer, and all around like historical legend, like true legend. We're going to be talking about Jesse James today.
Yeah. Oh. And just for the loser aspect too, we're also jumping in there because Frank is the forgotten James, if you will. So Jesse's your Bill, Frank, your Brian Doyle Murray. All right.
That's
oh, come on.
I was going to go with Casey and Ben Affleck, but
it worked out okay for Casey in the long run, I think.
Kinda. He got his Oscar.
That is interesting. That's got to be a fun Thanksgiving table, those guys sitting across from each other.
I like to think like that, and then also like there's like a third Hemsworth.
True.
And just be like, how would you like to be like Bill Hemsworth?
Isn't there a third Hemsworth?
There is.
I forget his name.
Exactly.
He's on Westworld.
There's Liam, Chris, and like Chet? Or like Chet. Hank? I don't know.
Chet Hemsworth. Well, there were a lot of James kids. We're just going to give a little background here. Then I'm going to set you up for success, brother, because you pointed this out to me. Jesse James is involved in what is known as actually, why don't you just say what the reason he's going to be on your show is and okay, I'll break perfect. Down mine.
So Jesse is actually responsible for the first daytime bank robbery of in American history. Like the first what we now know as a stick-em-up is a Jesse James original. And also the first successful train robbery in American history.
Yeah. By the way, for those who are listening, not the one that married Sandra Bullock. Different Jesse James. Okay. Just want to be clear on that.
Same level of bastardry, but for different things.
Well, he's depending on who you're talking to, you get a different answer about Jesse James. That's the weird part, because I always knew him as a bad dude, right? Then you start reading about him and then you see some of that. Like, he was pretty popular in his time, depending on who you were talking to.
He was. And like his circumstances, like, I'm not going to say that like what he did was good, but like I usually like don't say this, like, because I feel like crime is like almost always a choice. But I kind of feel like the conditions that he grew up in, like, really groomed him for a life of crime. Like,
oh, totally.
I don't think that you put most people in the situation that he was in and you get a different result.
I think you're right, man. It's one of those things, too, because a lot of stuff, pop culture-wise, we try to tie that into, and obviously Kahuna is this massive wealth of knowledge on all things pop culture, so I think you're going to appreciate some of the weird tie-ins today.
Is that just a nice way of saying he's obsessed with the Muppets? Because it's true on both
no
counts.
No Muppets today, I don't think. I don't think we have a Muppet tie-in just yet. But I will say this. What we do on the show is we don't do any of that revisionist stuff. We try to get people into, we taught my dad one word on the show and it was Zeitgeist, which is German for spirit of the times. And we're trying to get you to understand why these people make the decisions they do when they're, because again, a lot of people don't even realize that, like, well, how could you wind up on that side of history? There wasn't a highway yet. You'd never heard of South Carolina. You know, there's a lot of weird things to consider. But I do like what you said too, because I don't think this guy could have wound up any different. If it was me, I probably would have done some of the bad shit this guy wound up doing.
Oh, definitely. And like his home county, especially like Clay County, Missouri, is like one of the most like interesting Civil War histories for a county, because like Missouri was a Union state, but the vast majority of the population was like in right. support of the Confederacy and slave owners, like including Jesse James's own family. And so like basically when the Civil War like kicked off and they joined the Union, they were trying to force people to fight to free slavery, which like them winning the war was going to put their family in a unique financial hardship. Yeah. And they had to like fight for it or be viewed as traitors. And so you had a lot of like people like jumping to the Confederacy or like different militias and stuff like that. It was a weird time, because this is like, a lot of times they're like, oh, like brother versus brother. But like a lot of times, like families really got ripped apart by this. Like, oh, yeah. Literally.
Lincoln married his wife, and his wife had Southern, you know, slave owning family members of it that had to be disowned. And then there were people going back and forth with Lincoln. And then Jefferson Davis is born maybe 20 minutes away from Lincoln. It's a weird time, especially out west, because I think everybody would say, actually, we'll ask the Kahuna. He plays the role of the audience sometimes on the show. Also, he's a smarter guy than he lets on sometimes with history. The start of the Civil War, when would you say it was?
Oh, God, why did you do this to me?
You don't have to say a date, but what incident? We've covered it on the show.
Oh, what incident?
Yeah, there was a fort in South Carolina.
Ah, shit. KP, I'm blanking. It's no probably because of the steak.
We fed him too much beforehand.
That's fair.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a... don't get them, you know, don't feed them after midnight kind of a thing. That's yeah. our kahuna.
There's about to be a lot of other kahunas in here.
Well, if Fort Sumner is when a lot of people like to say that the Civil War started, but there's like, Pete's right. There was some bloody fighting going on. When you call a state Bleeding Kansas, that's when you know that maybe the polite Midwestern people have some shit going on with them. All right.
Yeah. The Hatfields and McCoys weren't kidding around.
No, it's definitely, and you did a great job of summing up Missouri too, because you got this thing where they're trying to juggle if we're going to admit a new state into the Union, is it going to be a slave state or is it going to be an abolitionist state, right? So you got that debate's going on from the get-go. So here we have a good, bad, and ugly legacy for our boy Jesse James. He's got a lot of titles, all right? And jump in if I miss any of the titles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But outlaw, murderer, soldier, guerrilla, as in warfare, not Megilla. Victim, abuser, war criminal, and the guy did all of this in just 34 short years on the planet.
You forgot one thing too.
Uh-oh.
Also starred in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I have a reference to that later that I was very excited about. Do you remember the mission in the video game that you had?
In the Bill and Ted video game?
Yes.
No, I never played it.
Your mission in the video game, Bill and Ted have to give an Uzi to Jesse James. I shit you not. But they're born to a slave-owning family in Missouri in 1847. Jesse was ironically the son of a preacher man. Kind of a, you know, not really following in dad's footsteps, are you? Older brother Frank, younger sister Susan, cousin named Christian Cordes.
Oh, wow.
Their father Robert died out in California during the Gold Rush. Do you you talk anything about the Gold Rush on your show at all? Or
I've made one or two references to it, but I've got a few episodes coming up that are going to deal more with.
There were some bastards out there.
Oh,
man.
Insane.
So they had that one. Now, we said the border state thing earlier, obviously, you know, the Civil War is really the precursor to it is being fought out in Kansas. And right nearby is Missouri. Like you said, specifically that one county, too. There's serious opposition. The area where the James boys are from, they call it Little Dixie. That's how many friggin' Southern boys were out there.
Jesus.
Yeah. Like,
one thing that I thought was interesting about that, too, is like Missouri is the only state that was represented on the American flag and the Confederate flag. It was the 12th star of the Confederate flag, because they did like have like a guerrilla secession as well.
True, man.
And then like Jefferson Davis like welcomed them into the like unofficially, but officially welcome them into the Confederacy as well.
There were some torn allegiances over in Missouri. If you go to Missouri now, you ever been out there in, you know, for any reason, military, comedy, anything?
I've driven through it a little bit. I grew up in Wisconsin.
Oh, no shit.
But I haven't really hung out there.
Okay. I had buddies in the Navy that were from Missouri, and they did a weird thing where you have they had some Southern tendencies and then some Northern tendencies. So your barbecue is going to be killer. It's going to have a Kansas City vibe to it, obviously. And then your drinking, though, like the hard liquor, they want to crack open the Jack Daniels. And then the only time I've ever seen this done, they pour tomato juice in their Bud Light.
What?
Yeah. It's like that Clamato thing or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they made their own at home. And I knocked it, and then I started drinking it at the pool one day with them. I was like, all right, I get it. But
that's crazy. That's the weirdest fact I've learned all day.
It was goofy. And that could just be that one family was like, you know, radiation poisoning victims or something. I have no idea. But, I thought a couple terms just to establish them as we're getting going here real quickly. The Bleeding Kansas we're talking about out there. You got the fighting in. We're going to use simple terms just to break through the story here. But you have the Unionist militias, and then you have these rebel militias, if you will. So the rebels are kind of your Confederates. They're going more towards a slave-owning society, mm-hmm. right? And this is why, because when people say it was a states' rights issue that had the Civil War, they're not wrong. They're not correct either. But like, it was a states' rights issue. The states' rights issue just happened to be, should we own people? So it gets a little ugly.
It does. God, and the so the militias, it was like, I know the Jayhawks were the pro-Union, right?
Yeah, so that's your local abolitionist movement was going to be the Jayhawkers, which you want to talk about a pop culture reference, Cahoon's University of Kansas basketball team. What's the mascot?
Oh, God. I don't
Jayhawks, motherfucker. So that name comes from that. And then I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. I actually forgot the name of the Confederate one. I think it was like the Bushwhackers.
Yes, sir. So you got Bushwhacker militias versus Jayhawker militias. And it's kind of you said Hatfield and McCoy earlier, Cahoons, and that was pretty solid. No one can tell who really started the aggression out there, but I can't tell you how ugly it got pretty quickly.
Ugh, so how bad are we talking?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll try to split this up here. So the Union militias, again, it's hard to tell who really started what, but the Union forces were doing house raids and enforcing martial law. And if you were a suspected person, like a sympathizer or something like that, they could pull you out for questioning. There was also some executions that went on. And then there was also a lot of maybe kangaroo courts kind of a thing, right? Like justice on paper. Well, it's like, well, you were seen by a judge, technically. The judge was a member of our posse, but he's a judge.
Okay.
That kind of a thing. So there was a lot of crazy stuff with that. They're putting each other down, property damage, shit like that. Did you know about what some of the Confederates were up to down there, Pete?
I know that they were engaging a lot in, like, guerrilla warfare and things like that. Yeah. Because everything, like, on paper was Union, but you had a lot of people that, like, wanted to fight for the Confederacy but couldn't do so officially. So they would go around and do that. And then there were also like gangs of like different raiders and things like that. Like Bloody Bill, I know, was like one of the Bloody Bill Anderson was one of the main like gang leaders.
No shortage of colorful names in today's story. I'll say that much.
Yeah. No, some good names. Definitely some good names. And then like, I remember like Frank James ended up getting like wounded and then like was in a hospital. And then the Union came and like basically kept him prisoner for.
Oh, yeah.
For couple months, I think, and then like he tried to escape and got
he's because Frank's the older, just to give the listeners some background here. So Frank is the older James boy, right? Now the father dies out in the gold rush when he's three, Jesse's three rather. So then the mother winds up remarrying. She remarries a total of three times, but the third guy sticks, and it's this guy who's a doctor, right? So they're pretty prestigious, well-off family in the Missouri area, a lot going on over here. And Frank winds up, because the entire family, you know, their father-in-law, or stepfather, I should say, stepfather and step-siblings and everybody, they all decide they're going to support the Confederacy. So they're on the side of, but again, I know Cahoon always makes this face too, man, but keep in mind, they've never gone more than 40 miles outside of where they're from. So it's almost like you want to be on the side of whoever's done the least harm to you. So now if you got these Union raiders, you're going to see in a minute what radicalized Jesse. So
yeah, and like, and also at this time, like, you can't not pick a side, like, especially in this part of Missouri, because it's literally a battleground state and there's things happening all the time.
It's just Giants, baby.
And if you try to like be Switzerland in the middle of Missouri, you're just gonna get hit from both sides. So you have to pick a side. You have to join a gang basically to protect your family.
Yeah, and then not for nothing too, if you want to think about it, if you try to say, well, I'm going to play it right down the middle, the amount of evidence these people had to have to determine whether or not, well, he says he's neutral, but I saw him talking to one of them Jayhawkers the other day. Next thing you know, they're burning your house down. So it's rough times over here, man. But so Frank James winds up joining first. He goes into he actually fights at a Battle of Wilson's Creek in 1861, which I didn't know this, had the first general killed in the Civil War, was at that battle.
I did not know that.
We tend to think of everything. I mean, I'm an East Coast kid, so our theory on the show is that New Jersey is the center of the universe. There will be no New Jersey tie-in this week. I couldn't come up with one. So that's in 1861, and he gets ill. Frank is ill, and he goes back to Clay County, like you were saying. And it's that weird stat where more people died in the Civil War from illness than died from combat. So that's like it's a pretty shitty thing to get involved. Like, oh, I can either take my chances on the battlefield and then just hope that the guy I'm sleeping next to doesn't have cholera. So he winds up getting back over there. And in these 2 years that he's kind of relocated to Missouri, Frank's engaged in guerrilla warfare. It's in Clay County, Missouri, where the James brothers and their stepfather lived. And in 1863, all hell is about to break loose. All right. New York City's got draft riots going on. That's literally when, Patrick Burke came over, the first Burke in America. He got off the boat from Ireland and joined the Union Army because he was poor. So you got the Emancipation Proclamation getting dropped. Stonewall Jackson has been killed at the Battle of Chancellorsville. Future President Ulysses S. Grant is starting to make things happen down near Vicksburg. And a Union militia raids the house of Dr. Reuben Samuel. So Reuben Samuel, the stepfather, probably a beloved stepfather to a degree. You don't read anything bad about him. And a young teenage Jesse are caught off guard. Pete, if you want to, take it away, brother.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good way to do it. Because, like, Reuben Samuel was as, I guess, as good of a stepfather as you could have back then. Because, like, her previous like, marriages did not go well. Like, at one point, like, after Jesse's dad died in California, she was, like, pretty much destitute. And, like, as soon as he died, like, there were creditors after her. And so, like, their parish, like, passed the collection plate around, but they couldn't make enough to, like, pay off the debts. And so she marries a really old dude to try to, like, settle some of the debts. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll marry you. But he's like, you have to get rid of your kids. And so then the James boys were, like, shipped off and their sister to another relative. And then he died. And apparently the mom was, like, thrilled. And then, like, eventually remarried this other Reuben Samuels guy who, by all accounts, tried to be, like, the best stepdad he could.
Didn't seem like a bad guy on that one, man. But they're going to have a shitty day in 1863. Young Jesse's a teenager, gets ambushed, caught off guard here. And it happens to be a Union or a Jayhawker militia. And they come in there. According to the legend, they lashed Jesse. I'm sure they roughed him up a little bit. There's no way you're going to let a teenage boy, you know, loose while you're trying to, you know, enforce something here. And they actually took a noose and put it around the neck of Dr. Samuel. And he lived. Let's be clear on that. But they did lynch him in the front yard in order to torture him, try to get info out of him, anything like that.
Yeah, they lynched him a lot. Like, they would, like, kind of like when you're, like, waterboarding somebody, like, they would, like, tie the noose. They pull him up, like, so his feet were dangling off the ground for, like, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. And then they'd, like, drop him on the ground. And then they'd do it again. Like, and basically did rounds of lynching him trying to get information. Good God.
Yeah, and Jesse's watching all this. So young Jesse's watching his...
And they're doing this to his stepdad?
Yeah, yep, to a doctor.
Dr. Reuben Samuel is getting pretty much tortured while young teenage Jesse is watching him. And he doesn't know that they're going to... You have no idea of knowing that your stepfather's going to live through this.
Right.
I mean, you're expecting that your world is over at this point. Now, one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, I watched a lot of Clint Eastwood movies with my dad and my grandpa. And my favorite movie possibly ever, actually, is The Outlaw Josey Wales. And the opening scene of that is very similar to this, where they created a more dramatic version of it, that Josey Wales, played by Clint Eastwood, is a man who's neutral in Missouri. And then the Union Red Legs come through, because they were called Red Legs because they was Union cavalry officers with, not red socks, but like red cloth around their from their ankles to their knees, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they showed up, killed his wife and kid, and then crucified him in his front yard, but he lived. And then that was going to be like his one man's war kind of a thing. Well, that's taken in part from what young Jesse James is seeing right here. So do you think Jesse James is going to say, I want to make sure I'm on the right side of history? You know, really, if you think about it, it's not a state's rights issue. It's actually a human rights issue. So I'm going to be on the side that just tortured my stepfather in front of me.
Jesus Christ.
Or do you think shit's going to get dicey?
It's going to get dicey. It always gets dicey. Look at the fucking show. Sorry, Sunquist.
But interrupt me anytime you have.
Oh, yeah. No, I will.
So now this is going to radicalize young Jesse. He knows that the militia is looking for Frank, right? And this boy's quite angry. A 16-year-old pissed off Jesse is now about to go meet up with, he's trying to meet up with his brother. And Frank is, you said a great term earlier, and it's important that we say this because this isn't, you know, gallant warfare. He wants to meet up with a group known as Quantrill's Raiders. So you got anything on Quantrill right away, or?
Not off the top of my head.
Controversial guy.
Yeah, controversial guy. Like, I know that he had about, like, 200 guys in his gang, and they were a pretty effective guerrilla force. And I believe that the younger brothers were also part of his gang. So, like, a lot of the people that would later become part of the James Younger gang, which is, like, the Youngers were another county's version of the James brothers, basically. And then they joined like a super gang. So you had kind of like the first like traveling Wilburys of crime.
I was just about to make a reference similar. I'm very proud of
They're
you.
Like the Avengers of bastardry.
Yeah, they really were. And a lot of them like got to know each other and got to like work together and stuff like that through being part of Cortland's Raiders.
Yeah. So this Captain Quantrill, I think, is what
Quantrill.
I'm making sure I'm saying it right, too. But there's a particularly deadly group, by the way, in August of that year. So this happened, I want to say earlier in the summer is when the incident happened with Jesse and his stepfather. So now Frank is riding under Quantrill, who, by the way, there's a reference in if you've seen any version of True Grit, the novel, the John Wayne version or the more recent version by the Coen brothers. There is a line in there where Rooster Cogburn, played by Jeff Bridges in the most recent one, says when he served under Captain Quantrill. And LaBeouf, played by Matt Damon in the new one, who's a Texas Ranger, goes, Captain of what? Because this wasn't the ethical warfare. These were bad people. These were marauders, pretty much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they had just pulled off a brutal, he was big on guerrilla tactics, a little bit of a ranger of sorts, getting skirmishes. They fought like Native Americans, you know, a different kind of cultural appropriation. But this particular event, they go for total war. This one's fucked up. Frank James is serving under the Raiders during what becomes known as the Lawrence Massacre. You got anything on that off the top of your head?
Well, I know that this is like the attack where like the name Bleeding Kansas like really comes from.
Oh, yeah.
And what do they kill? Like 200 people, mostly like men and boys.
But... Yeah. 200 men and women. I'm sorry. Men and boys, rather. The women were allowed because women weren't enlisting. So it wasn't that there was a mercy shown to them for that. And that was on August 21st, 1863. So bloodiest in Kansas history. You're dead on with that.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy time. And like it's very formative for a lot of like the tactics and things like that they will later use to perform their robberies and stuff like that.
Jesus.
Well, Kahuna's bringing up some photos, which I'll probably put up on the Instagram page, which by the way,
is drawings.
Scrimshaw. Stu, could you imagine? Scrimshaw is the wildest thing too. The idea that this would be done into like there's other pieces that are like done into wood, but like you have to be a woodworking artist on that one. And meanwhile, I'm sitting here struggling talking into a microphone. Yeah. Ain't good. But
this is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely brutal, bloody day, man. Oh, by the way, I love on Wikipedia, they call it a Confederate victory. It wasn't really a battle. You know, it's not like a lot of the troops that were involved that were killed by they call them belligerents. That's the correct term on there. But a lot of the U.S. soldiers or the Union troops that were trying to do something were literally being mustered as the attack was happening. So this is total guerrilla warfare, element of surprise, everything. Which you'd think would get him some bad press, but it doesn't. Young Jesse's like, oh, I want to meet up with that guy, man. So he winds up riding with a gentleman that Pete introduced us to earlier. Tell me if this sounds like a happy guy you want to hang out with, Kahuna. Bloody Bill Anderson.
Oh, sounds like a great drinking partner.
Like, you just have to hope he's British. I'm like, oh, Bloody Bill Anderson. It's a terrible accent.
Bloody Bill, you want to go drink in Asbury Park, man? It's going to be a great time.
Oh, you're bringing Bloody Bill out with you?
Yeah, man. It's always a party with Bloody Bill.
Well, Bloody Bill was, he earned that nickname. I'll put it that way. Jesse, by the way, early on gets a serious chest wound in combat. Yeah, Jesse. He gets a couple serious chest wounds. So he's battle-tested guy, man.
And these, like, add to his legend later because they're like, oh, you can't kill Jesse James by, like, shooting him in the chest. Because, like, people try and they do. And he
and
always...
he's fine.
Well, he's not fine, but he comes back from it.
Yeah, so he becomes... The folk hero revisionist thing gets really interesting as we go here. But Frank and Jesse, you know, I feel bad for Jesse. He missed out on the Lawrence Massacre. If only there was another massacre they could take part in, Pete.
Uh-oh. Foreshadowing?
So this leads us up to what is known as the Centralia or Centralia. How do you want to say it? Centralia Massacre. We'll go with that one.
Centralia.
And I feel like you got some info for me on that one, Pete.
Centralia. Is this the one where the prison collapsed and killed Bill Anderson's sister? Or was that?
That was the end of the Lawrence Massacre because that prison went down too.
In Kansas City.
Yeah. The Centralia Massacre was involved the Raiders stopping a train that was carrying Union soldiers, and many of whom were unarmed. A lot of them were trying to go home, that they had done their time or whatever. And these Confederate raiders stopped them, then massacre and scalp over 20 of them. So they weren't done yet, though. The raiders are actually then pursued by a Union detachment that was able to counterattack. All right, so now the raiders are running away, and then they counterattack. I didn't do infantry. I served my country one urinal cake at a time, Pete. So when you got, you know, boots on the ground knowledge, you stop me and correct me, please.
Will do.
All right. So they pull off this counterattack, and they actually wind up getting the drop on their pursuers. And Jesse is credited with the killing of the commanding officer that was pursuing them. I think his name was Putnam. I can't remember. But they also then, because they're good guys, refuse the surrender of the Union troops and massacred the rest of them. So... don't fuck with Bloody Bill Anderson and the boys. They don't leave any survivors to tell the story.
I think it's a different Putnam. Because there's a George Putnam in the American Revolution that apparently I'm a distant relative of, who is like one of the generals. So I had to think about that for a second. I'm like, no, different time. But and it's like, I'm glad that you mentioned the surrender thing, because at one point, like during all of this, Jesse like has enough, as I think he's 18 at the time. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to surrender. And so he goes and like starts riding towards the Union forces, like by himself with a white flag. And they decide to basically extend the same courtesy and say, oh, well, we're not going to accept your surrender, and try to shoot at him. And I think that's where he gets a second chest wound.
Yep.
And that one, like, he basically vows, he's like, I'm never going to surrender again.
And he doesn't for the remainder of his days on Earth, man. But the James boys aren't internationally, I shouldn't even say internationally, they're not, it's not worldwide fame, but they're definitely, there's enough pressure back home from what Frank and Jesse are doing on the battlefield that their family kind of gets told, hey, you're great, you know, nothing against you, but your boys are out there doing a lot of stuff, and it might be better if you moved out of Clay County forever and did it immediately. So they try to get him to go down to the southern states, but they don't do that. They actually just go to Nebraska. So my guess is it's because they didn't want to root for an SEC team. They wanted to be, you know, stay in the Big Ten.
That's fair.
That joke went over Kahuna's head, which is tough because he's 6'2". So, but it's not going great for these Raiders either. They get to pull off a lot of their shit, but Quantrill dies of combat towards the closing days of the war. Bloody Bill gets killed in an ambush.
Really?
Jesse receives, like Pete said, his second devastating chest wound. And inadvertently, a recurring theme on the show, he gets nursed back to health. Do you know who does this for him?
I do not.
He gets nursed back to health by his cousin, who is named after his mother. And Jesse marries her.
You have to if she's named after mom.
That's right. That's...
Any questions about whether they were Southern or not, or laid to rest right then and there?
I don't think you realize how disgusting your last statement was. Oh, my God.
We've covered that. I'm adopted, so the worst part of being adopted on online dating is just hoping that you're not fucking your own sister. Yeah, you're grossed out. I live that nightmare every day. All right? That's me. I was like, oh, this girl's got blonde hair and blue eyes. Are you Irish? Oh, this isn't good.
Are you kidding me? My dad was a music artist, man. I don't know if I've got another brother or sister out there. It's terrifying to go on Tinder.
We're going to have to do some math on that one. I'm wondering if we're related now.
Oh, wait a minute. We do look similar.
You did say you were Irish.
Don't you think we look the same, man?
I think so. It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
I often do get confused. People come up to me on the road and be like, are you Big Kahuna? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so you're the reason why I have like 23 warrants across the country.
He's throwing them out today, Pete. He's showing off for you. That's what it is. War is not going great for those Southern boys, all right? The war is actually now over. Reconstruction's underway. We are setting the stage for Pete to shine right now. It's fascinating to me because we're going to use terms that have a modern sense to them, and they don't really fit back then. You got Democrats and Republicans are now the terms that were being used to label former federal and Confederate troops. Jesse is pretty much still bedridden around this time, but he and his brother refused to surrender. They kept their weapons, all right?
Now, question for you.
Talk to me.
I know you said with the Zeitgeist of the Times, you can't really describe people as Democrats and Republicans based on the terms now. But could you essentially say it was basically reversed, or is that still too complicated?
I think that's pretty accurate. Like
you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, the Republicans were the abolitionists, and the Democrats were the we want to get slavery back and do all the things that the.
It's literally just reversed, and it's kind of been that way ever since.
I'll say this because that definitely there's some truth to what you guys both said there too. I've kind of noticed that it changes in 30-year shifts. That's where again, it goes back to as crazy as it is. You read some of these weird articles where like, oh, by the way, if Reagan ran today, he'd technically be a Democrat. And then if you go back 30 years from there, you'd be like, oh, JFK, you mean that radical Republican? Like it's weird. So that's why I hate using the terms, but it's the correct terms for the time.
Yeah.
So it's always that thing. And again, let's remind everybody at home.
This isn't a political
show. Not a political show. We're telling stories, you bastards. But it's a weird thing with that. And Pete's right, too, by the way, because around this time, you know, you're approaching President Grant, right? That's what's coming here, which imagine how unpopular the general that just engaged in total war in the South would be, that now he's trying to unify the country. It's a really wild. I did not give Reconstruction the time. Like, were you fast in history? Reconstruction never grabbed you as a kid, did it?
It wasn't like we didn't really talk about it very much. Like we spent a lot of time talking about like the colonial days and things like that, and then we started to get a little bit into the Civil War, and then you find out like, oh, they didn't teach you like almost anything about the Civil War except, you know, good versus bad and stuff like that. And I also like I grew up in Wisconsin, so we're like very, very Yankee centric Civil War education.
I had fun when I was there because I did my time at Great Lakes, and on certain weekends we would sneak out to Wisconsin and go hang out over there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was but the people of Wisconsin are also a gorgeous country out there too.
It can be like a lot of it's like flat and awful, and then there's like some like beautiful like lakes and woods and stuff like that. But you have to really roll the dice to see what you get.
And you guys are fun out there too, because you will meet someone so far left to the point where there's no you can't go any further left, and then you will also meet somebody who's so far right beyond, you know, there's nothing out, they couldn't be more, and everyone gets together and roots for the Packers. It's pretty wild, man. So I thought this was worth mentioning just as we're setting you up here, brother, because I'm excited. I have less than a paragraph of notes before it's your show, buddy. Like we said, war's over. Reconstruction's going on. They keep their weapons. The mere act of keeping your weapons, okay? Again, you're Jesse James, and you don't want to turn your guns over to the people that were attempting to kill your stepfather in front of you. You've done some bad shit now, too, so you know there's people that want revenge against you, so you got to keep your guns on yourself. That's, you know, protection at this time.
It was expected of them to hand their guns in after that. Really?
Yeah. There was also Confederates were not allowed to hold office or vote for the first couple of elections afterward, which had some really great results, depending on how you look at it, and then also some terrible results, and then it all collapsed anyway.
So. Yeah, and actually, like, I'm glad that you mentioned all that, because one of the things that the Raiders did, like after the war, because like the war ending didn't like end these militias, but they started doing like all these like crazy like voter suppression campaigns where they were like going around and like actively intimidating Republicans to try to not vote.
Oh yeah, you got the Klan is almost at its heyday over here at this time frame too. Wildest shit I ever heard when touring something. I went to Appomattox Courthouse with a friend of mine because every vacation for my family was always something battlefield or fort. And then oddly, I'm down at my buddy. His dad was a cop who had just retired, and we were staying on there. They had a big chunk of farmland in Virginia, and that was the only thing nearby was Appomattox Court. I was like, oh, we should go to that. And my buddy was all confused because he was asking. He goes, oh, so this was when the Civil War ended, right? So this was it? And I was like, no, that was just Robert E. Lee surrendered here. So that was the end of the Army of Northern Virginia. And then so then my buddy asks the tour guide, he goes, well, then when did the Civil War actually end? And the tour guide gave, he goes, depending on who you talk to, it's still happening. Couldn't have been a nicer, more informed guy either, but it was just a very funny answer. So they got all this crazy shit going on over here. The Marauder Guerrillas are now, because like we said, everybody's been whacked pretty much. Quantrill's dead. Bloody Bill's dead. The Raiders now fall underneath the leadership of a guy by the name of Archie Clements, who...
You go from Bloody Bill to Archie.
Yeah, Little Archie was literally his nickname. I swear to God.
Did he perform in the Archies and release a hit single called Sugar Sugar?
He did, actually.
That's what I figured.
Kona, while we're setting Pete up for success here, because he's about to tell us about the heart of the story today, just casually bring up a picture of Archie Clements and tell me it does not look exactly like Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday from Tombstone.
Oh, my God.
Because these boys are about to pull off quite the feat here. Pete, do me a favor. Give us the... yep, there it is. Arch Clint. I'm your huckleberry.
My God.
I'm actually glad that you mentioned Archie because he's a central figure in the first robbery that...
By all means, brother, take it away. This is welcome to the I Can Steal That showcase portion. Hit me, buddy. I'm fascinated.
All right. So, like, KP did a great job, like, setting up the wars over, but these criminal organizations, as they tend to do, like, after wars, by the way, like... It's the same thing like after Vietnam and also like the end of the Korean and World War II, where you start to see like biker gangs and things like that.
Oh, the war's over. It's just business as usual.
Yeah. Like, but a lot of the veterans and stuff like that, like they've like when you like serve with somebody like and you go through like hardships and stuff like that, like it's hard to break that bond. And when the war is over, you don't want that bond to be over. So a lot of times you end up having people like start biker gangs or bands of marauders and things like that. And so this is basically the precursor to like the biker gangs that.
That's a great comparison, by the way.
Thank you.
So this is the Hell's Angels of.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, cool.
Pretty much.
Not far off.
And so the first robbery, and I want to like caveat this too. Like, this is not the first time in American history that a bank had been, or that a bank had money stolen from it. There were two previous cases that I'll probably cover on a future episode at some point. But both of these were like heist style. Like they break in at night, steal what they can. And then you find out in the morning that this has happened. But what Jesse James and his gang did was the first daytime stick 'em up robbery.
Ballsy.
And so they do this February 13th, 1866. And it's important to point out that like Jesse is at this point, like still recovering from his chest wound. So he can't like participate.
He's not useful.
Yeah, he's not useful. He can't really participate in this, but he plans it. He cases the bank out. And this is like, it's a bank he knows well because it's the Clay County Savings Bank. And
where are they from, Kahuna?
Wait a minute.
Keep going, Pete.
But so they go up to the Clay County Savings Bank in Liberty, Missouri, which is their hometown. And so 13 members of the gang roll up. Frank James and Cole Younger of Younger Gang notoriety dismount their horses, enter the bank right as it opens. Frank James goes up to the cashier. This guy's name is Greenup Bird, which I like. It's a good name.
Greenup?
Yeah, Greenup, like prenup. and he gives him like a big bill and asks for him to like to get change for it. And he has no problem with that. He opens up the cash register. And the second that the register's open, James pulls out a pistol, points it right at his face, and...
Give me the money.
Yeah, pretty much. It starts saying, give me all your money. At this point, Younger jumps up and goes over the counter, and Bird's son, William, is like, just... Because at that time, like, you brought your kids to work with you sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, he sticks a gun in the younger Bird's face and hands him, like, a big flour sack and says, like, all the money in the bank, put it in the bag.
Jesus.
Yeah, and they're the only, like, these four people are the only people in the bank. And
the, am I supposed to hear the Heat soundtrack playing in the background?
It feels very, very Heat-like. And so they go and... they put all the money in the bank. There's a tin container, like a tin box of the government bonds as well. And all in all, they end up with about $60,000.
Jesus.
Which in today's money is over $1 million. So they did good. But after they get the money in the bank and stuff like that, they order the two, like Greenup Bird and William Bird, to, like, get in the vault. And then they close the door and run out back to their horses. What they didn't realize was that... just closing the vault door didn't do anything. So these guys just, like, push the door back open, run out. I mean, it's the first time it's ever happened. Like,
it's the trial run.
Yeah, I'll give them credit for that. Like, you don't think about that. But they run out and they're like, robbery. And this gets the attention of a couple other guys who are on the street. And so at this point, like, James's gang just starts, like, shooting guns in the air, which is an old guerrilla tactic to, like, get everybody to scatter. Mm-hmm. And then Archie Clemens, who loved to kill, he was just a big fan of murder, and was known for, like, being a loose cannon and killing for fun. There's two guys, S.H. Holmes and George Wymore. And Clemens points his gun at Holmes, pulls the trigger, and misses Holmes, but, like, hits his jacket. So it's like, it's a close shot.
And like, what the hell are you trying to do, man?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, so they start taking off. They're like, I'm not sticking around for this. And then as they're running away, Clemens goes and shoots Wymore in the back and kills him. And this is a
yellow belly.
Yeah. Like James's plan was to not have anybody get hurt or killed. Like he just wanted to steal the money. And actually a couple days after the robbery, he sends a letter to Wymore's family apologizing for the death.
And Holy shit.
He's like, I didn't mean for him to die.
He was being a stand-up dude.
Yeah, he was trying. Like, at this point, he was still, like, kind of, like, chaotic neutral, I guess. And so he goes and sends this note, and they know that it's Jesse James because he wasn't famous at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, there's nobody, like, pretending to be him. It'd be, like, somebody pretending to be me on Instagram. Like, nobody's doing that.
It's so funny too. I like the fact that he sent the letter is hilarious because I could picture the conversation. Hey, cousin wife, what do you think of this here letter? Oh, that's perfect. Go ahead and send it to the people that you got involved with in their murder. Okay, that sums it up.
Yeah, pretty much. And so they do that, and like I don't know what the family's reaction to it was, but he did send the letter, and that kind of like cements the fact that he planned this robbery as well.
I actually have some of the contents of the letter here. If you guys want to, it was pretty interesting. So it had the date on it that it was sent. And then it just said, my bad.
How you got me.
It was a little excitement, man. But,
I wonder if that bank is still around.
I think it's a museum now, actually.
Cause
there are fests all over the country that celebrate some of his exploits as we're going to,
Okay.
Cover a little bit. Did you have anything else on that, the robbery there? Because
no, that's pretty much everything that I have on the on that robbery. It's pretty simple. Like, it's crazy to me to think that it took till 1866 to have somebody think like, oh, I could just get them to give me all their money.
It is late in the game. You think about that
one. It kind of is, because like things are nuts like the whole time. Like it's not like they all of a sudden like discovered crime. Like, This was just, like, the first guy to...
But wait, this was Jesse's idea to rob the bank?
Yeah, this was Jesse's idea. Like, it was his hometown bank. It was, like, he cased it. He thought about everything. He's like, okay, cool. There's only, like, two people that usually are in the morning. So we'll send two people, small town. So we'll have, like, 13 to, like... It made it easy so, like, if they scattered, like, they couldn't catch everybody.
It's a pretty good plan in reality.
It honestly is. Like, it's pretty good. Because, like, also, like, who's going to try to fight 13 13 guys on horseback with guns. Like, nobody.
But it's also crazy because, like, just that one thought, we could rob the bank, would just spiral into the thought process of other outlaws for years to come. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
How that hadn't happened yet.
This is almost the cliche robbery in old Westerns and then TV and still to this day. I mean, like, if the Simpsons were doing
almost
a robbery.
This is the cliche robbery. Yeah.
You know what this is? It's like when you, like, look at, like, modern art and you see, like, a Rothko and you're like, what kind of asshole just paints a blue square? And you're like, I could do that. Like, that's the easiest thing I've ever seen in my life. They're like, but nobody did it until he painted the blue square and had the balls to sell it for, like, $50 million.
That's...
And so everybody, like, talks shit on it now. Like, good. It was very, like, simple. But, like, at the time, it was, like, pretty groundbreaking. And, like, the way that he gets into, like, his train robbery is also, like, very ingenious.
Hello, Jesse. You're a pioneer.
He kind of is.
He was. It's weird because I know it's fun to put him into the dumb Southern accent, but the guy's got...
No, it's a very smart thing you
said. Well, no, it's weird because I had mixed feelings about him coming into the episode because I had a Wild West book as a kid that I would just stare at the pictures. So Jesse, obviously, you know, a lot of murder and he wasn't a good guy. You know what I mean? But then there's also these weird things where it's like his life's almost poetic at times. And then we realize why some of that is, too. Chronologically, I forget. When does this train robbery come in?
The train robbery is 1873.
1870. So that's a little bit. All right. I'll tell you what. Let me set up one piece here and then I'm going to throw right back to you if that's cool.
Perfect.
I'm excited, buddy. That was killer, by the way.
Thank you.
Frank and Jesse are going to remain part of the Clements crew here. But one interesting thing about old Archie Clements, we're going to have this feud with the governor of Missouri that's going to kick off right now. Okay. Archie Clements is harassing the Republican office holders and the federal troops that are in Missouri. The governor calls in for more support from the federal government, right? Which that's a tricky one, too, where it's like, we just settled this war. Now more federal troops are coming in. That's going to make some of the people who were Southern sympathizers who maybe were passive sympathizers. That's going to radicalize them because they're like, I don't want fucking troops in my town. This is, you know, you try to put yourself in the people's shoes a little bit if you can.
Yeah.
But so the governor's calling in for more people here. And then on election day, this is how ballsy little Archie Clements is. Archie shows up in Lexington on election day, right? And just presents himself. It's, hey, guys, it's me, little Archie Clements. Picture him as Joe Pesci, if you can. Right? He's sitting there. He's got a toothpick in his mouth. He goes, what the fuck are you going to do about it? And the state militia shoots him in the head. So it was supposed to be a ballsy thing, but the militia winds up killing him.
But he doesn't die right away either. They shoot him and he like gets back on his horse and like tries to ride off. They shoot him again. And he like falls off his horse, like old Western movie style. He's like, like the water tower, but with a horse. And then like they start closing in on him and he's like trying, like he's still trying to fight back. Like at this point, like they find him and he's trying to cock his revolver with his teeth. And then they're like, well, what are you, they're like, Archie,
what are you trying to do here, man?
What are you doing? Like,
Over for you. Relax.
Yeah, and that's basically what they say. And he's like, I did everything I said I was going to do. I'd die before I surrender. And then he did die. But that governor ended up, like, saying, because, like, you can't – it's like you can hate the guy, but you have to, like, admire, like, parts of him. And so –
like his ballsiness?
Like, yeah, like, because he said, he's like, there goes a man, like, I've never seen stronger grit on a man alive. Like, so, like, true grit, like, I know you mentioned that if, like – he is the grittiest of
fucking A. He's a wild dude, man. He his death, by the way, pissed off Jesse because Jesse wrote about it 10 years later and was still angry about it. Now, this is an interesting part here. Some historians don't like the lack of proof of some of the stuff that this James Boyce get to be involved in, because as Pete just set us up for, people started saying they were Jesse James, or they would misremember. So, like, I think it was Jesse James. Remember that bank robbery a couple years? Yeah, that was. Now that I think of it, that was Jesse James came through here. Oh, by the way, I will sell you hairs that came off of Jesse James's horse right here in my barber shop. You know, ignore the fact that I don't have a beard anymore. These are Jesse James's horse's hairs.
And, I love how novelties like that could be. You could get away with that in the times.
Oh,
there
yeah.
There's no way you could prove it or disprove it.
It's going to be great.
I love that shit.
Well, Jesse's known, by the way, he develops the. There's this weird thing they try to set up for him. So, as stated earlier, that was his hometown bank that he robbed. So this idea that he's presenting himself a little bit as the robber of the people, like I'm the Robin Hood type thing here. And he's writing, by the way, I'll cover the exact name and the publication later. But this is how smart Jesse James, remember, right? Like you doing the sister cousin thing. It's very funny to make him Cletus from The Simpsons. But then you see how smart this guy was big picture wise. He's writing like political essays that are getting published by the papers that he's sending off to. And then certain papers, it was the one paper was the Kansas City Times, and a newspaper writer by the name of John Newman Edwards decided that he was going to work with Jesse James to create a sympathetic, compassionate figure out of him, because he also was a Confederate sympathizer. And they were writing these almost glowing reviews of like, the James boys pulled off a robbery today. They robbed those dirty bastards. I mean, you're those dirty bastards, but they were doing it for you. Like they divided by zero on logic, but it sells a good story. It sells a paper. I mean,
yeah, he gets a lot of, like, he basically gets the first PR man for his for his crimes.
I want a picture of Spider-Man, damn it.
Yeah, kind of. And it works like really well for him. And one of the things, hold on, I lost my train of thought.
I jumped time-wise, though. That's my fault. So.
No, that's fine. This reporter like basically is his fanboy for the rest of his life. And he starts saying, like, basically he like tries to recreate the legend of Robin Hood. He's like, well, he steals from the rich and gives to the poor, even though there's like zero evidence that he ever mm-hmm. gave a cent to anybody.
Nope.
But a lot of people like get misinformed and they, mm-hmm. they think, oh, he's a good guy. So it gets like very blurry. Like they start like really like painting with watercolors and all the lines start blurring together.
I think the year now, if I have it right, 1869, this is where some shit gets nice. Bad. Jesse will shoot and kill an unarmed bank cashier because he falsely believed him to be the man who shot and killed his mentor, Bloody Bill Anderson, during the war. Only problem is Jesse's got the wrong guy. Oof. So following this murder, just a cold-blooded murder at that point, in which Jesse is, you know, saying, well, it was me taking revenge. Him and his brother then engaged in a gunfight with a posse in town and were able to escape. This makes the headlines. And the PR man, to borrow your term, Edwards of the Kansas City Times, he spins it, right? So he goes, Jesse James got revenge, blah, blah, blah. And him and his brother made a daring escape through town. Meanwhile, the governor, Thomas Crittenden, declares the James brothers as official outlaws. So they were already outlaws because they didn't turn their guns in at the end of the war. Now you're double secret outlaws. And they put a reward on Jesse's head. And it's hard to tell between the newspaper coverage or the governor putting the price on his head, which one of those makes Jesse James more famous. But here he is. He stole the spotlight from Frank, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's eating it up at this point. Like at this point, like Ben Affleck has written Good Will Hunting and is it's the more famous of the brothers. And they commit a lot of like tons of robberies. Like I can't even get into like all of them. I really only prepared like the Clay County one and then the train one, because those are, I would say, his two biggest and most influential. Yeah,
go ahead with the train robbery one if you want to now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And none of them are as successful as the Clay County one, like $60,000, $1 million in today's money. Like you can't beat that.
So he set the bar too high for himself.
He
like
did.
If you have a pickup line that works, you're going to use that pickup line again, even though, you know, because yeah. in your mind, you're like, but it worked last time. Like $1 million shot.
Yeah. Like you go home with Kate Upton and then like, you're going to use the same line the next day, like on whoever's going to listen to it. And so a lot of times he's getting, you know, $500 here, $700 there, which is at the time still pretty good. Like it's still sometimes tens of thousands.
You could survive off that for months.
Oh yeah.
Years.
Absolutely. But like this is maybe like another, this is another like good showcase. Like he has a very good crime brain. So in 1873, July 21st, Jesse and his gang going just outside of Adair, Iowa.
Yeah.
And this is the other thing, is they're going all around the country at this point. Like, so they're not just sticking to Missouri. And that's like one of the reasons they're able to do this as long as they can. And so they go, and like Jesse had like studied the train schedules, and like that's the thing about trains, is like they're always on time, or they're supposed to be. Like not if you live in like the tri-state area, but like in theory, trains are supposed to be like pretty timely.
That's how you know I grew up here. I do not trust mass transit.
When I was in Korea, like the trains were like so punctual that if a train ran more than 2 minutes late, the conductors would go through and give everybody tickets so that they could like give it to work and be like, yeah, it was the train ran like more than 2 minutes late.
No shit.
Yeah, like it's insanely efficient. And so Jesse like knew that there was like a train with like a lot of gold and things like that, and he knew that it traveled this track at this time. And so he sets an ambush for it on July 21st, 1873. And what he and his gang do was they found a blind corner in the tracks, like just a big bend. And they start loosening up the tracks.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. People die, but like it's kind of cool. And so they start loosening up the tracks, and then they tie a rope to the tracks and kind of like hide in the bushes. And as this train like starts going and approaching this bend, they pull the rope, which like
pulls a rail.
Yeah, pulls the rail off. And then the train like basically just like hits this blind corner, can't drift because it's a train, and topples over. So the engine car of the train like completely like flips over, and I think the conductor and an engineer die. It killed the engineer and badly injured another guy.
Jesus.
But the rest of the cars just stop. And this is a pretty good sized train. That I think there were 8 cars total. So there were a couple passenger cars, a couple cargo cars.
Were they filled? Like, were there people on the train that were like, this was Jesse James and his gang? Or
yeah, there were people on the train.
Just to let you know too, Jesse's so famous at this time that the gang, when they're pulling off some of these robberies, are to the point of almost doing it with pageantry, where it's like that Mulaney joke. You let them know it was the James Younger gang.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have the honor of being robbed by the Jesse James gang today. We'll be stealing your money and your valuables, but know that you had the pleasure of being in my presence.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And but Jesse had made a miscalculation. Like, he had the right train, he had the right time and stuff like that, but this wasn't the train carrying all the gold.
You gotta be kidding me.
It wasn't as full as it should have been. And they only they like open up the car with all the money, and it's only about $2,000 in cash and gold, which is still a couple $100,000.
That's a lot of effort for that, though, yeah. Compared to Kansas City.
But the guys are like disappointed with the haul, and so they decide to do what all greats do. They don't let it get them down, and they just go to the passenger cars and stick everybody up. They're like, give us your money, too, which I kind of love.
It reminds me of the scene in Pulp Fiction when they're going to rob everyone's wallets because they'll get twice as much money from the wallets. So it was I love you, honey bun. So that part's just brilliant on that one.
It is. And despite the modest haul that they end up getting from it, it shocks the public because they're like, this man like threw a train off the tracks.
And bit of a legend.
Yeah. And it like really cements his legend. And
did he ever try that again?
He didn't, but this really started like a lot of big train robberies.
Yeah.
This is where you get like the old cliches of like the guys like blowing the bridge and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
Because they figured out that like, if you can stop a train, like you can get all the money. And there's actually other like really cool train robberies that I'm going to cover in a couple weeks.
Nice.
That borrow from this a lot. Like he really did like pioneer a lot of like crazy criminal concepts.
Was that same one? It was Adair, you said? Do I have that right?
Yes, Adair. Okay. A-D-A-I-R.
Is that the same one that he had? Because him and the boys, they donned some famous masks once.
This is the white. This is the white handkerchiefs around the face.
Which I think people. There was a rumor that it might have been looking like Ku Klux Klan masks, right?
This one I think was just bandanas.
Okay,
but there was probably a different one with the Klan masks.
He had a career of worth of robberies and stuff. So. I didn't have any of that info, man. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy to like learn about, because again, like you would think, like I always like before like researching this one, I always thought that like this happened all the time in the Old West, like train robberies and stagecoaches and stuff like that. But nobody had ever taken a train off the tracks and really like done this until Jesse James did it.
When he got and the gang too, by the way, which we said earlier was the James Younger gang. So you got the like we said, your you're getting the baddest sets of brothers from a couple of different states and territories coming together now. It's the James Younger gang. They try to be the younger James gang, but I mean, that didn't really work out. But the younger brothers, by the way, no, it gets confusing with the terminology here, but the younger brothers that are joining up with Frank and Jesse James are the following names. You have Cole, John, Jim, Bob. Those are the younger brothers, along with Clell Miller and Christian Cordes. Those are the Confederate Raiders that go on to rob banks.
Okay.
There were actually 14 different younger kids.
Holy
shit.
Which
is insane.
Well, they that's quite the family over there.
It really is.
That's a family. I see. Coon is making a face. I wonder why. by the way, Newman would ensure that the James gang, this publicist here, they keep getting seen in a positive light despite all this wild shit. Like, yeah, they're robbing train passengers, too. There were other times when they let the people go and then they hammed it up, like, you know, to a degree. It's like, we're here for the bank's money, not your money. Wait a minute. My money is the bank's money, you know?
Yeah. And at this point, too, like you'd mentioned John Newman Edwards before. Mm-hmm. After this train robbery, he writes a 20-page, like, basically just
Jesus.
Like a 20-page ball cupping of like the James brothers and just like how great they are. And it was just like an insert in his paper, the St. Louis Dispatch.
Dude, all right, that's man. Could you, I've never gotten, I once got called a jovial host in a write-up once. I got that. So that's not bad, but I'll tell you, go ahead.
I've just gotten local man.
Local man's pretty solid though, dude.
Local man.
The publicity, the fanfare, and the spoils are starting to get a little bit out of hand here. So it's time to bring in some muscle to handle these James Younger boys. Enter, as we've covered on the show before, Alan Pinkerton and his Pinkerton Detective Agency. For those who don't know, Pinkertons are basically a private police force that could be on the, they had a wide range of different things they were involved with. One week they could be on the trail of a murderer, you know, trying to preserve society. And the next week they could be, beating the shit out of labor strike guys. So definitely yeah, not a
bunch you want to mess with.
Sympathetic based on the dollars and bills involved, you know what I mean? Yeah. But so they send off a couple of people to go take a look into the gang here. They have somebody who's trying to infiltrate the James Brothers farm. They got people that are cozying up to some of the younger family members, you know, they get dispatched to deal with this gang. They find little success and sometimes early graves. Several agents die in gunfights with the gang or get a load of this. Sometimes their supporters in the area are ratting them out. That's how much support this local gang has.
Damn. You know?
Think of it this way, if you can, for a modern political, not a modern pop culture reference. If you think of it as when the townspeople liked Sons of Anarchy, because they were keeping the peace kind of to a degree. It's something like that. We're like, yeah, these are bad guys, but we trust how bad they are. If that makes sense. It's a devil, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like what Escobar did in Colombia.
Ooh, fucking international loser this week, Biddy.
and like being pursued by the Pinkertons who you said, like busted union strikes and were like no slouches. Like they would throw like pipe bombs in people's windows and
that
stuff
happened.
Like that. And so this kept it moving a lot. So they went from Huntington, West Virginia. They set up in Nashville in like 1875, and they're moving around a lot, trying to like save their mom from further raids by the detectives too. Like they're trying to
just to give context to that, if I may. There's a thing where you go too far with something. So if you're looking at it, and you're saying there's a ruthless outlaw gang out there, and the Pinkertons are coming in to handle them. If you're a person who just wants peace and quiet, you might side with the Pinkertons. Until you hear that Alan Pinkerton gets so angry at the idea that a couple of his agents have been killed that he orders them to firebomb the James farm, which kills Frank and Jesse's younger brother and then literally blows their mother's arm clean off. So now they have a one-armed mother that they're trying to, you know, get around the country with, like Pete's setting us up for here. If you weren't supporting the James boys yet, you probably are now. You're like, why would he ever trust the government? Why? His stepdaddy got hanged by him. He's been chased by him his whole life, and now they came and done blown his mama's arm off.
And their younger, like their stepbrother or half brother, he was only 8 when they killed him.
Yeah, good point.
Like so, like it's
so there's valid reasons and valid ammunition for why this dude is so anti.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Why he's seen as like such a public hero.
Absolutely, like it's like, I don't like to like draw that comparison all the time, but like when we were in Afghanistan, like we weren't always like, there's no way we were always seen as the good guys. Like we tried to do stuff, but if you're like, if an army comes in and like is occupying your land, and like ever since they've been there, like things are blowing up and family members are going missing and dying and things like that. Like, I don't, like, it's weird to say, like, because I'm not like a Taliban sympathizer, but I absolutely understand. Like, because if it happened to me, like if the Taliban like came to like New York City and started hanging out, like I would absolutely start fighting against them.
Oh yeah, you know what it is, Pete. You have empathy, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, that's
you're one of the good guys.
That's why I got out. They're like, stop it.
Yeah, it's enough of that out of you, pal. No, but that's so again, they're bouncing all over the place, like you said here. The geography is intense on this. They got Missouri's still a hotbed of support for the gang. Literally, this is how nuts this is. Remember I said earlier that the Confederates, former Confederates, were not allowed to hold office or really vote on stuff?
Yeah.
Well, that has passed now. You have to bring them back into the nation here. You got to kind of heal the wounds and try to bring everybody together, which means a lot of shitty compromises, which means that the guys who had a punitive action against them where they weren't allowed to vote, they're now being brought back in, that they have to bring them into the fold. And one of the things they almost immediately, they're so close that they almost pass an amnesty bill forgiving Frank and Jesse for all their crimes.
Really?
It barely doesn't pass. So that's how popular these boys are over in Missouri. But
which is pretty crazy. And this kind of sets the stage, too, for like the final, like the last act of the James Younger gang.
Hell yeah. All you, brother. Oddly, we don't mean to be doing this, but a lot of our topics have been taking place in Minnesota lately. We've got something very interesting cooking.
Yeah, so this is the famous Northfield, Minnesota raid. And this is September 7th, my mom's birthday, 1876, so like 2 years before she was born. And the target was the First National Bank of Northfield.
Republican senator owned the bank or something, right?
Yeah.
Did I have that right?
Yeah, okay. It was a Republican senator. Basically, there were like a lot of reports that General Adelbert Ames...
what a name.
Who's like the son of like a rich owner of a mill in Ames, had deposited $50,000 there. So they were basically acting on the intel that there was at least $50,000 plus everybody else's money.
It's a good time to be getting ready to get involved with all this one here. I think that was, so it's 1876, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay. They're getting ready to have this bank robbery over in Minnesota. I'll tell you what, I can actually, if you got the research on it, go ahead and dive in.
Go ahead if you want.
Okay. I got to stop me when I'm wrong here. But this one was later remembered by, I think it was Cole Younger said it, that he goes, we were desperate men. We took a chance and we lost, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So it's not the well planned out. It could have worked out beautifully for him. But this was not the carefully laid plans of some of the earlier endeavors of the gang.
Yeah, that is true. And General Ames was the former governor of Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
And so he moved north after that. And yeah, and this is, I guess, from like a crime standpoint, if you wanted to compare them to serial killers, this is like where they enter like their berserker mode, and like they plan the first couple, and then like the bloodthirst is just too much, and they start making mistakes and get
this is where people turn into hats.
Exactly.
Well, shit, man. They take me through it, by the way, because I have info. And then the big thing, because I followed Frank and Jesse for my research, so I have what happens to them post incident. But if you had more details, I want them.
Yeah, and part of this too, like the fact that they were like targeting Ames was because one of the younger brothers had a spite against Ames. Like he had felt like he had been slighted by him in the past. And like they knew who he was because one of the Cole Younger said that he recalled like greeting General Ames on the street like just before the robbery. He's like, General? And
Jesus.
Yeah. Which is pretty nuts. So not
the best greeting we're gonna have in this story, because the final greeting that we have is pretty epic, but General is still pretty damn
yeah,
good.
Yeah, like tipping the old hat. And then at 2 o'clock they start trying to rob the bank. So they go in, but at this point, like Northfield residents had already seen the gang because they'd been getting drunk at a restaurant across the street and like eating fried eggs. So it's like if you see like a bunch of dudes like drunk at an IHOP and then they're like, oh, these guys are up to no good because it's 2 p.m.
Jesus.
And they go and they could like smell, like at the trial, like people testified like how much alcohol they could smell on them. which is also not a great, don't get drunk before you commit a crime is the.
Or if you're going to get drunk, just, you know, chill.
I'm going to throw this out there. Mind your own business. This is my rule. Like, you can do with it what you want. Only commit one crime at a time.
Oh, all right.
Like, because that's when it starts getting messy.
Listen to Uncle Pete, kids. He's got your best interest at heart.
And so three of the outlaws, Bob Younger, Frank James, and Charlie Pitts, they cross the bridge by the Ames Mill and enter the bank. The other five, which is Jesse James, Cole and Jim Younger, Ben Stiles, or Bill Stiles and Clell Miller, stood guard outside. And as the, basically they're standing outside the front door waiting for the other ones to guard the game's escape route.
Mm-hmm.
And, basically they said, get your gun, boys. They're robbing the bank. And so then the town people like started arming up. And a huge gunfight ensues.
Like GTA 3 5-star gunfight.
Oh, God.
Okay. It's yeah, let you know the it's, level.
It's insane. And, like, so several, like, a lot of citizens, like, took up arms. Like, there was a local hardware store. And the guys just, like, literally just, like, handing people guns as they, like, run by. It's the most American thing that I can that I can think of. But they start shooting, like, from behind cover and... like pouring like really concentrated fire on all the outlaws. During the gun battle, a medical student named Henry Wheeler kills Miller. Cool. Shooting, and he's shooting from like a third floor like window of the hotel. So like this is nuts. Like this is like old West movie.
All
like,
hell is broken loose.
Yeah. Like there's
shit's hit the fan.
Definitely a dude that's about to go and like fall off the water tower. I already made that joke, but this happens.
Hey man, it fits.
The Wilhelm scream, this is where it comes into play.
Exactly. And then other civilians, because it's basically like they've never fought like a whole army or militia of, they've never had to fight a whole town before.
No, I'm trying to think of something to compare it to, but the one that popped in my mind was the botched one in Public Enemies. When they realized that it was almost a trap kind of a thing.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But the whole town's fighting back against them now, and... these boys are going to have to get out of here. They got to spring into action to try to save their asses today. So you came into town looking for a little money. Now you're just hoping to get out alive.
Yeah, which is, I would love to see a movie just on this.
Oh, dude.
Just on this one event.
They couldn't believe that because there is an accurate movie. We do a segment at the very end of the episode called Casting Couch. And if you have to get out of here at any time.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
We're going to wrap briefly. But we do a segment at the end called Casting Couch. So if you want to start thinking, Pete, who you would cast in some of the major roles here. I would love to bounce your ideas off of the kahunas here at the end.
Perfect.
But that pretty much is, as you said, the high watermark of the James Younger gang.
It's, definitely.
That it takes about 2 weeks afterwards, if I remember correctly. But 2 weeks after, there's a big gunfight that takes place. A manhunt party finds a bunch of the remnants of the gang. And after this, that particular gunfight wraps up, you take into account people that were killed during the robbery itself and then the guys captured by the manhunt party. The only members of the James Younger gang standing are, give me one guess, Cones.
Of the
James
party?
Younger gang. There's only two boys left standing.
Who do you think it's James Brothers.
You know it.
Yeah.
So, yep, now it's just the James gang, Joe Walsh. They're not killed or captured. The two wind up laying low in Tennessee under aliases for the next couple of years. Jesse is now married and also a father by now, and he's not quite the angry 16-year-old that set off to wage a one-man war.
They still lugging around one-armed mama?
She may have passed by this time. I don't recall. I should have looked. Her name was Zerelda, which I thought was an interesting name.
That's a good name.
Yeah, that's not bad at all, man.
Zerelda.
Anything you have, Pete, jump in.
Oh, I was just going to say like that this was like such an event, too, that like Northfield, Minnesota still celebrates every year the defeat of Jesse James Day.
I would like to go to that festival.
I would like to go to that too. Like I've always wanted to go to like Dixie Stampede in, do you know what that is?
No.
It's actually Dolly Parton owns it, which is, I think, even funnier. But it's like in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, like in the Smoky Mountains, there's a couple good like battlefields and stuff like that in the area as well.
I know Gatlinburg is a pretty popular tourist destination, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like Tennessee, Las Vegas, I guess.
Nice.
A little bit. Like, I don't know if there's casinos, but Dolly Parton owns this restaurant called Dixie Stampede, which is basically medieval times with the Civil War. And you have to sit either the blue side or the gray side. And then like they fight it out and stuff like that.
Nice.
And it's kind of weird. Like, I don't think it's not long for this world anymore, but it's run for like 30 years. Cause like they like explicitly like don't mention like slavery, and they call it like the struggle, and like try to make it all like Dolly Parton, like folksy and homey and stuff like that.
Right.
So I've wanted to go there for years, but now I kind of would rather go to this. Cause I feel like if you had like a reenactment where like people are like just going nuts for.
Yeah. You don't have to choose a side on this one either. You can just be like, listen, I'm here to see some shit.
Exactly.
That's a good UFC fight, man. That's like when Couture started pulling off upsets, you know? But as we start to wrap up over here too, again, anything else you have, I want to make sure we use all your research, because I want your listeners to feel like they got their full episode.
No,
too.
Definitely. I'm pretty much tapped on the stuff that I researched at this point.
I do way more diligent than I would have done it. So I'm glad you were here, dude.
Thanks, dude.
So still with this outlaw price on his head, Jesse oddly takes to this quieter life. All right. He's kind of digging it. He's a homie boy. You know what I mean? Now he's got... He likes to sit around, maybe, you know, spruce up the place a little bit, play with the kids. But for protection, he remains armed at all times and asks a former associate and his younger brother to move in with his family for protection. These brothers are known as the Ford brothers, Robert and Charlie. Charlie had ridden with Jesse in the past, so he knew he could trust them. And young Bob Ford was very eager to join him. So it turns out an unfortunate thing about Bob, Kahuna. You want to guess what it is?
Short temper?
Possibly. It's always weird when the person you invite in to protect you is also actively plotting with the governor to have you killed.
Ah,
we have a Selena fan club president situation.
Oh, my God.
Dude, my buddy Tim Rich, a Navy buddy of mine, he's going to go nuts for that, because he's always telling me, he goes, I'm so proud of your stand-up career. Just, you're getting so much closer to me having to kill you. But... turns out Bob's plotting with Governor Crittenden the entire time for the, I'm going to say, quote, capture of Jesse James, because they want to capture him so they can, quote, bring him to justice. Right? Not going to go down that way. On April 3rd, 1882, Jesse, over breakfast, sitting around with the Ford boys, you know, kids are around, stuff like that. Jesse seems to have figured out that the Ford brothers were up to no good. Right? They tipped their hat. There was information that Jesse got from the paper. He's trying to figure out why the Ford brothers haven't told him about. And it's almost like he realized he was betrayed. And this is where, like, depending on which part of the mythos you want to go with Jesse James, this is where our hero stands up, takes his revolvers out, places them down on the nightstand, and then walks away knowing he's been betrayed, almost like Jesus entering the garden after he knows Judas has betrayed him. And then our hero, Jesse James, then stands up on a chair, right, or a stool, depending on which version you're looking at, because he notices that there's a picture frame hanging on the wall that's a little dusty and a little crooked. So he steps up onto the stool in order to clean it off with his back turned to those who have just betrayed him. And Bob Ford takes out his revolver and blasts Jesse in the back of the fucking head.
Right behind the ear.
Yep. And there was nothing we could do about it, just like Pesci in Goodfellas.
It's almost like... If you were to describe this like in a movie, I'd be like, this is a bit on the nose, but but yeah, no, it's pretty crazy how that happens and how he just kind of,
it's almost over the top. You're right, because they kill him. He actually gets identified by I think it was his chest wounds and a missing chunk of one of his fingers, so this is wild here. So he gets killed April 3rd, 1882. The house is immediately a mob scene. People are sitting there. They want to see the house Jesse James got murdered in. The two brothers immediately go seeking their reward. And you want to talk about having your day in court? You know, I thought this was worth noting. The media is all over the death. The Ford brothers go to turn themselves in looking for their reward. The brothers instead quickly find themselves arrested, put on trial, found guilty, sentenced to death by hanging, and then get pardoned by the governor all in one day.
What?
What a roller coaster.
That's a mixture of emotions, man. That's like, you know, I don't quite know what I have nothing to compare it to. Because, you know, you think, hey, today's my lucky day. I just cashed in big. Oh, shit. There's no way they're going to stop. I'm going to die. I've been pardoned. Okay. So
Jesus.
It gets pretty intense, man. The pardon, though, from the governor it made it very obvious that Governor Crittenden had plotted this the entire time. So it's that weird thing of like, you killed a bad guy, but you did it in a dishonorable way. So the supporters of Jesse James are going to say, oh, that bastard governor. And then people who wanted Jesse James dead were like, I don't care how it had to happen. That boy had to go. So I'm preparing now for our Animal House type send off. You know what I'm talking about, Kahuna? At the end of Animal House when the print pops up on the screen? We got some good stuff here, but.
Oh, well, you make me want to shout.
But before we wrap up and go over to the casting couch, I want to ask Pete, you have anything else you want to say before we wrap, brother?
No, I think you did a good job of covering it. This was a lot
likewise,
of fun.
Likewise, man. And you do have a great podcast, so I hope that listeners of Loser will go ahead and check out I Can Steal That, available on iTunes, SoundCloud, everything else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's available iTunes, SoundCloud, like anywhere you get your podcasts. You can go directly to ICanSteelThat.com. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at ICanSteelThat. And I will also implore my listeners to listen to American Loser. It is amazing. Like I love the history, like, because you cover like a lot of rich topics. Like I love like the Edgar Cayce episode, and
that was fun.
I'm forgetting his name now, but it was the dude was nuts. He like sold, like basically embezzled his own war memorial.
Oh, fund. Dan Sickles.
Yeah, Dan Sickles. That's one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life.
I think he's the official mascot of American Loser.
He sets the benchmark, because we also have a loser scale that we use kind of loosely every once in a while. So like
Sickles is the bell curve. But look at this bastard. He's got a website too, but definitely check that one out. Also, Pete, plug social media for you, so, because you're a very funny comic, dude. People should check
you
out.
Thank you. Yeah, you can find me just on YouTube at Pete Stegmeyer. Definitely subscribe. I'm going to try to be putting some more stuff out there. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Peter J. Also on Instagram at Pete Stegmeyer. Facebook, Pete Stegmeyer. Not that hard to find.
Nice, dude. And always good to have more veterans on the show. So thank you for coming on, dude.
Thank you. Of course.
I'm going to hit our Animal House type send off. Then I want to do casting couch and we're out of here. But
do you want me to play Shout while you?
Almost. What was the song they play at the very end when everything's rolling up, when you find out Belushi's a senator now?
Oh, my God. I love that. I love the whole ending of that movie.
Well,
it's
you're
going to
love this then, I think. So and our Animal House type send off will include Charlie Ford, the brother of Bob, who, you know, took part in the assassination, would go on to commit suicide amid a deep morphine addiction. Frank James would later surrender and then live out his days peacefully, giving tours of the James family home for 25 cents a person, then later toured the lecture circuits, making a profitable sum honorably alongside members of the recently freed from prison Younger Gang.
That's amazing.
Oh, dude, I loved that line too. Jesse James would be portrayed in films by the likes of Henry Fonda, Johnny Cash, Robert Duvall, Kris Kristofferson, Colin Farrell, and most recently, Brad Pitt. In music, he is referenced by the Sugar Hill Gang, Scarface, The Pogues, Bob Dylan, Joe Walsh, Johnny Cash, Lead Belly, Cher.
I was hoping you were going to mention Cher.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it.
Though. Oh, it's a great song.
Which one was it?
It's called Jesse James. She's like, just like Jesse James. And I like that one because, like, this is like going to be a Long Island rant for a second.
Do it.
But, hold on. How can I forget his name? Mr. Long Island, the singer. Billy Joel.
Billy Joel, yes.
Billy Joel. He has a song called The Ballad of Billy the
Kid.
Billy the Kid,
yeah.
And he has to, like, it's a fine song, like, because it starts out, like, very biographical about Billy the Kid. But then, like, at the end, and I hate this so much, like, he decides, he's like, oh, I got to tie this to Long Island. And it's like, Oyster Bay, kid with a six pack, or, like, whatever he does. And I'm like, you don't need to bring Long Island into every fucking song you do. Like, he would do that to, like, Happy Birthday. He'd be like, Happy Birthday, Massapequa. Like, and I hate it. Like, so Jesse James is the superior song.
I would agree with that, too. It's like, I think Attell had the great joke. It was what's the name of that song that Bruce Springsteen does about how the working class guy gets screwed over in Jersey?
Oh, Uptown Girl.
Yeah. And then finally, this one is my absolute favorite here. And Bob Ford. Well, in 1892, Bob Ford was operating a tent saloon out in Colorado when a man named Edward O'Kelly walked into the tent and said, "Hi, Bob," then emptied both barrels of his shotgun into Bob Ford's neck, killing him instantly. O'Kelly was arrested. So now get this, too. So this is Bob Ford who shot Jesse James in the back of the head. And now this O'Kelly guy has been arrested, and he is sentenced to 18 years in jail, of which he will only serve 9, thanks to a petition signed by over 7,000 people who said he was just getting revenge for Jesse James.
That's pretty amazing.
So I'd say we'll start off with the Cahoons over here. You heard the names of some of the people that have already played him, but if you had to cast Frank and Jesse James in a movie, you would go.
I actually have a whole troop cast built for you, KP.
Hit me, brother. So oh, this is exciting. I love when he turns the TV off. It's so like he's pulling back a curtain for everybody.
So we're going to start, because I really wanted to cast Bloody Bill, because I think that was kind of cool to start off with.
I like
So we're going to go Billy Bob Thornton, just because I think that that would be just a cool-ass image.
Nice.
Because he kills it in anything he's in, so we're just going to be gold with that.
He'd be great at that.
So for Jesse and Frank, Frank is his brother's name, right?
Correct. Frank's the older brother.
So for Jesse, I'm going to go Scott Eastwood.
Ooh. Oh,
that's a good...
So for Jesse, I'm going Scott Eastwood. For Frank, I'm going Taylor Kitsch. I just watched him in this crazy-ass Waco movie on Netflix, and he killed it.
They look like brothers, too. That's good.
That is good.
That's who
Taylor Kitsch, great in True Detective Season 2. Underrated season.
So that's who I would cast as the James brothers. And then, just for shits and giggles, because I really thought it'd be kind of funny, Christopher Mintz-Plasse as Archie Clemons.
McLovin?
Miss McLovin. McLovin.
I don't know if I can beat that.
This might be his best one. He's showing off for you, Pete. That's
And what's crazy, like Archie Clemons was like, so I think he died. And also Bloody Bill like died. They were like 25.
Jesus.
They were kids. Like, and a fun fact about Bloody Bill, he had a rope with him where he would tie a knot every time that he killed somebody. And he would, like when he died, he had 57 knots tied
Holy
in this rope.
Shit.
And he was like 25 years old.
Okay. So now that would also change my casting. I didn't know that. I didn't know he was only 25. But I don't know who now.
I say go with Billy Bob Thornton. I think he's a great.
But yeah, that's who I pick is the James Brothers. I think that'd make a cool movie.
That's one of your home runs on the casting couch right there. Pete, if you have anything, say it. If not, no pressure, dude.
Oh, man.
I'm just burying motherfuckers today.
I'm going to say
you got?
I want a female reboot. No, I
want it directed by Paul Feig.
No, I want it directed by Sandra Bullock so she can get revenge on her ex-husband, Ooh. Motorcycle Jesse James. And it's just going to be.
So Sandra Bullock is Bob Ford in this then, right?
Yeah, Sandra Bullock
is
Bob Ford. I'm going to say, actually, no, if I have to do this traditional, God damn it. I need to find a way. Kurt Russell's in it. Like he made the movie for sure. He's going to be. He can be General Ames.
I like it.
I like it. Because then he could be like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, you know, if this was 1970 or the 70s just in general, Kurt Russell Young could make an amazing Bloody Bill.
He would be a great.
Because like coming off of Snake Plissken.
What'd you say? Bloody Bill? Call me Snake.
I would have this movie directed by John Carpenter. It'd be great.
Oh, I love that.
Because he always
first
wanted
Western
to...
with a synthesizer in it. That's good. Well, shit, man. I do want to grab out of here because we got to get Pete back to New York City. I got to go let my dog out, and Ming is about to kick me out of this place. That being said, thank you to the Kahuna. Thank you to Mike and Ming at A Shared Universe. Pete Stegmeyer, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
brother.
You so much for having me.
This was
KP
great.
Burke.
We'll do it again.
Great having
man.
You here.
Great to be here. This is so much fun.
The veterans always hold their own on this show. Have you noticed that, Cahoons? That he's a veteran and a comics. That literally sums up the two best types of guests we have. But this was absolutely awesome, guys. If you want a Patreon episode, I do just for a $5 donation minimum. That's all we're asking. One large cup of coffee over at Dunkin' Donuts. You can help support the show. I still put the free episodes out every Tuesday. Check us out at American Loser Instagram. It's American Loser Podcast on Instagram, American Loser Podcast on Facebook. KP Burke Sucks on Instagram, KP Burke over on Facebook. That's where I'm posting mostly jokes and shit. And again, for just $5, you get a free Patreon-exclusive end-of-the-month episode. You guys paying for that helps me keep this shit going. So it's like PBS, except with a beer budget. So thank you for that. And guys, that being said, my name was KP Burke, and that was Jesse James, American Loser.
An American loser, the day I was born. An American loser, the day I was born.
American loser the day I was born.